This is Jody Stone on the 14th of February, 1996, interviewing Reese Harris at his office on Main Street in Lakeville. Reese, we need to know your whole name and where you were born.
William Reese Harris. I was born in Irvington, New York.
When did you move here?
In the early 1930s. I'd say about 1930-31.
To where you now live?
Yeah, that's correct. Moved here from Geneva, New York, where I spent most of my childhood.
Oh, you did? Oh, mm-hmm. Not in New Jersey then?
No. Irvington, New York is where I was born.
Okay, then Geneva, and then here. Right. With David, your brother?
Yes, and my brother John.
And your brother John, mm-hmm. Yes. What we want to hear about from you, Reese, is the business of the, is it the 10th Mountain?
It was the 10th Mountain. Yes.
That you were in.
Right.
And David. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? Where did you train?
Well, we both, I think, had a love for skiing early on, thanks to the Sater brothers who lived here in Salisbury at that time. In fact, my first pair of skis came from Sater's, brought over from Norway. And when I went to college in 1936, went to Williams, I was on the ski team, and my brother Dave was on the AO ski team. So, when war broke out, and we got word through the National Ski Patrol that they were recruiting people for the 10th Mountain, or the Mountain Troops as it was known then, we joined up. And we both went for our basic training to Camp Roberts in California. This was 1942, January 42. And from there to Fort Benning, Georgia for officers training, and then to Camp Hale in Colorado for our mountain training. We both went to Kiska in the Aleutian Islands in 1943, where my brother was wounded, and he was returned to the States early, and I came back to the States in December of that year, and returned Camp Hale, at which point there was rumors that the 10th Mountain was going to go down to Camp Swift in Texas. So I had enough of that. I was for the Mountain Troops and not for going to Flatland. So I applied for the Air Force, which was like waving a red flag, but anyway, I was I left the 10th Mountain and went to Europe with the 2nd Infantry Division, Normandy, Brittany, the Battle of the Bulge, and on into Germany, and I ended the war in 1945 in Czechoslovakia. In a very fitting spot, our regimental command post was in the brewery in Pilsen, so we had plenty of beer to celebrate the end of the war, and then came back through Le Havre to the States, at which point the war in Japan came to conclusion, and we were demobilized and were not kept in any longer.
So was the 10th Mountain ever in Europe?
10th Mountain went to Italy, and that's where my brother went.
Oh, he stayed in.
He stayed with them. It was very strange. Just prior to the Battle of the Bulge, our artillery commander, General Hayes, came and said to me, "I have just been notified that I'm going to take over the command of the 10th Mountain Division in Italy, and I know you have a brother there. Is there anything you would like me to tell him?" As I recollect, I said, "Tell him to keep his tail down." And he actually did see my brother and pass that along to him. So Dave stayed in Italy until, well, April 1945, and we both met up again in New York City in July of that year, both thinking that we were headed for Japan, but thank goodness that never occurred. And that's just about it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Now tell me about the business of the skis being made here.
The what?
The skis being made here in town.
Well, they were made by the Sater family.
Who are they?
Magnus, Otar, and Johann. I think Johann initially was brought over here by Mr. Donald Warner Sr. and worked for Mr. Warner. And he brought his brothers and their families over here in the years following. And they became Olympic champions. Mm-hmm. Otar was an outstanding jumper. Magnus was a national cross country champion. And I think they were both on the American Olympic team. Speer joined up in the U.S. Armed Forces and had a very distinguished career. Was heavily decorated, as I recollect. But they were the ones that started this manufacturing.
Were they wooden? The skis? Were
they were wooden, yes.
Were they very, very long?
They were all different sizes. But I would say back in those days, the average ski was reasonably long. Today we go by centimeters. In those days it was 5 feet, and I'd say they were 7.5 feet long. They were a very good ski. I guess some of them were used by the mountain troops, but not all of them. Rossball Company out in Colorado made wooden skis, which were used by the ski troops. But we, although we train in a snow area, we were known as mountain troops. We were not ski troops, although the publicity was ski troops. We were able to fight, theoretically, either in snow or in the mountains, in any condition. I think at one time we were headed for Norway, for the invasion of Norway, and which had been wonderful for all the Norwegians that we had with us. It was a wonderful outfit. We had many of the famous skiers of the day. Torger Toko, who unfortunately was killed, he was the champion jumper of the country at that time. Walter Parker, who had been the...
Wait 1 minute. Ginny, we're picking you up. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Walter Parker, who had been the coach at Dartmouth, he was in the mountain troops. Berger Torsen from here, from Salisbury. Ole Hege was not in the mountain troops, but he was another man from this area who was well renowned for his skiing ability, champion and all the rest. Berger Torsen was a wonderful person, and we had many great times with him. He was an enlisted man, and my brother and I were officers, but that didn't make much difference in the mountain troops. We had some good times in Denver. The Brown Palace Hotel had a wonderful atrium open, oh, I guess probably 10, 12 stories from the ground up. We've come down on our pass from Camp Hale up the mountains, and we bring our climbing ropes, and lower ourselves over the balcony. Much to the chagrin of the management, of course. Many years later, I was had been skiing at Vail, and I came back down, and I couldn't get a flight out. So I went back to the Brown Palace, and I went to the dining room there that we had often gone to during the war. And I presented myself at the Maitre D's desk, and I said, "Could you give us a table for the evening?" He said, "I'm sorry, we're full up." So I gave him a long sob story about having been in the 10th Mountain and his first time I'd been back, which was actually true. Well, he said, "Just a minute." We ended up in a table next to Rex Harrison and had a wonderful evening talking to him. And but it brings back a lot of memories talking to you about those days.
It's interesting. The skis were made, did you say, in what is, how did you describe that building where Thornhill Flowers is? It was a Quonset hut, wasn't it?
Where these skis were made?
Yeah, back. Well, there.
It was back down where the Thornhill Flower Shop is now.
Which is behind the market.
Yeah. It was a nondescript building of some sort. I'm not sure whether it's still there. There's a building there. There's a auto part.
Oh, way back there.
Yeah.
It was in that
general area right there. And that's where their factory was.
When do you suppose it stopped?
Oh, gosh. I'm sure it must have stopped very soon after the war. Because by that time, changes in skis were coming rapidly. We were getting into metal skis. I'll never forget the first metal skis. They were tested up at Catamount. It was like somebody wearing a pair of tin cans on their feet. What a noise, rattling down a slope. But
were they Satre skis, the metal ones?
No, they were not.
Ah.
No, they were somebody else's. I forget who invented them, but they were tested there when Jack Fisher had Catamount.
Oh, I remember, yes, Jack Fisher and Catamount.
Yeah.
That started, what, right after the war or in the early 50s?
Well, he had it before the war, but it really blossomed after the war. I was on the so-called ski patrol then. Wasn't very sophisticated. We brought bodies down on toboggans between our legs. We had a little flag on our ski pole, and that was about it. We didn't know much about first aid, but we got them down. Now, of course, all that's changed now. It's become very sophisticated, and you have good training.
Reese, when you first went out with the 10th Mountain, you said you went to, was it the Aleutians?
Yes, our first, the 87th Regiment,
yeah,
of which Dave and I were in, became part of the task force to the Aleutians. And we went up there in August of 1943.
Was there fighting there?
There had been, but
American-Russian?
2 days before we got there, apparently the Japanese had evacuated the island by submarine. It was very foggy up there, miserable conditions, so they were able to get away under cover of bad weather. But we didn't know that because they had been receiving fire from the Japanese up until a day or so before. So unfortunately, we lost quite a few men from our own fire at that time. We were on top of the ridge. We took over Japanese emplacements on top of the mountains. Kiss was a very mountainous island.
How do you spell that?
K-I-S-K-A.
Kiska.
Yep.
Kiska.
Quite far out in the Aleutians toward Japan. Miserable spot. And beyond that was Attu, where the Japanese had fought very hard and massacred quite a few of our people. So anyway, we lost quite a few, including one of my best friends. But
and Dave was injured there.
He was injured there.
What is this I hear about the fact that Dave was next to Bob Dole when Bob Dole was injured?
Well, I'm not sure whether that's true. He was with Colonel Darby, who was beloved by everybody in the 10th Mountain. And Dave, I guess, was quite close to him at the time he was killed. And the shell that killed him landed very close to where Dave was, but he didn't get hurt. Now, I don't know really whether he knew Lieutenant Dole or not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
It's one of those stories that goes around.
Yeah, sure.
Anything else you want to tell us? That's
only, you know, thinking back in those days when I moved here in 1931 with my family in Geneva, it was a different place than it is now. A very quiet, bucolic area. Very few young people. If you were looking for a date, there weren't many young women around in those days. But it was wonderful because all these streets here, as you've seen in pictures, were had elms growing along them. And it's sad to see those changes, but it has to come, I guess. Yeah. Then we both went to Hotchkiss, along with my brother John. And that's just about it.
You've done well. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.